Today we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 11. Kadashya tapta tapasam avitripta drisham rinam adayanta adhadyastu subimbam lokalochanam kadash. Word for word means Vadashya, by exhibiting. Atapta, without undergoing. Tapasam, penances. Avitripta drisham, without fulfillment of vision. Nrinam, of persons. Adaya, taking. Antaha, disappearance. Adhat, performed. Yaha, he who. Tu, but. Sabimbam, his own form. Loka lochanam, public vision. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Lord Sri Krishna, who manifested His eternal form before the vision of all on the earth, performed His disappearance by removing His form from the sight of those who are unable to see Him as He is, due to not executing required penance. Purport. In this verse, the word avitripta drisham is most significant. The conditioned souls in the material world are all trying to satisfy their senses in various ways, but they have failed to do so because it is impossible to be satisfied by such efforts. The example of the fish on land is very appropriate. If one takes a fish from the water and puts him on the land, it cannot be made happy by any amount of offered pleasure. The spirit soul can be happy only in the association of the Supreme Living Being, the Personality of Godhead, and nowhere else. The Lord, by His unlimited causeless mercy, has innumerable Vaikuntha planets in the Brahma-Jyoti sphere of the spiritual world. And in that transcendental world, there is an unlimited arrangement for the unlimited pleasure of the living entities. The Lord Himself comes to display His transcendental pastimes, typically represented at Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. He appears just to attract the conditioned souls back to Godhead, back home to the eternal world. But for want of sufficient piety, the onlookers are not attracted by such pastimes of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that only those who have completely surpassed the way of sinful reaction can engage themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The entire Vedic way of ritualistic performances is to put every conditioned soul on the path of piety. By strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of social life, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, forbearance, and so on, and can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service to the Lord. Only by such a transcendental vision are one's material hankerings fully satisfied. When the Lord was present, persons who were able to satisfy the material hankerings by seeing Him in true perspective were thus able to go back with Him to His kingdom. But those persons who are unable to see the Lord as He is remained attached to material hankerings and were not able to go back home, back to Godhead. When the Lord passed beyond the vision of all, He did so in His original, eternal form, as stated in this verse. The Lord left in His own body. He did not leave His body as is generally misunderstood by the conditioned souls. This statement defeats the false propaganda of the faithless non-devotees that the Lord passed away like an ordinary conditioned soul. The Lord appeared in order to release the world from the undue burden of the non-believing Asuras, and after doing this, He disappeared from the world's eyes. Om Gyan Tinirandasya Kyananda Shalakaya Chakshur Namitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Vainamaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Staptam Yivantale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shita Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakujatam Sahakana Lagnatam Pampatam Tamsitivam Sagraitam Savadutam Prajnasatam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Patamishtha Hey Krishna Guru Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namusute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vishavani Sutse Vrindami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Atitanam Pavnevyo Vaishnevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna Intoxication worn off after yesterday. Still some survivors. I'd like to welcome back Gaurav to the Srimad Bhagavatam class. So today, this verse, we're hearing another verse spoken by Uddhava, eternal associate of Lord Krishna. So soon after Krishna finished his pastimes in this universe, he last met with, as we've been hearing, Uddhava and Maitreya Muni, and then immediately just after that he departed this material world, or this universe at least. So after that, soon after Uddhava's meeting with Vidura, and because he's so, because Krishna is his friend, his eternal friend and associate, then he's fearing such a terrible feeling of loss that now Krishna is gone and he's feeling extreme separation from the Lord. As we'll hear in tomorrow's verse, Krishna goes on to the next universe to again continue his Nitya Leela, eternal pastimes. So, just while he's wound up these activities, some of his devotees were left behind. We heard last week these intense feelings of separation that Uddhava was feeling, such that he was stunned just on hearing the inquiries about Krishna from Vidura. He was becoming stunned, and Vidura could see he was manifesting these symptoms of love. And so it's very hard for us to understand these intense emotional feelings that consume the heart of a pure devotee. Intense emotions are just, on the bodily material platform. But still, all these descriptions are there in the scriptures, and they're described in a lot of detail in Nectar of Devotion. So we may wonder why, what's the purpose? Because, we're not meant to imitate these symptoms, and generally we're on a much lower level of devotion, just neophyte devotees, so why do we need to hear about this far out level? Is it meant to, bewilder us or make us feel like we'll never attain that? But actually, just this whole, the process of bhakti yoga, we're hearing, or that the process is about hearing and chanting, so this hearing about the ecstatic symptoms of a pure devotee, or the extraordinary acts that they perform while in this material world, all these serve to purify us and now purify our conditioned consciousness. So although we're not there, you know, it's not something that we're really aspiring for. I mean, we're aspiring to advance in devotional service, but we're not trying to imitate this. But just hearing about this elevates us, because otherwise we, you know, it takes us out of our ordinary conception of the world. We hear about, oh, this, you know, kind of almost strange symptoms, as if, you know, pure devotees described in the 11th canto, they become like a madman. So we kind of break our mundane conceptions of behaviour and say, oh, this this pure devotion is really something else. So we get purified by hearing about it. And this is just about Uddhava. So as we know, hearing about the Lord's devotees is as potent as hearing about the Lord himself. Srimad Bhagavatam means the narrations of the Lord and his devotees. So glorifying his devotees is also very potent, highly recommended, because a pure devotee is only in relation to the Lord. They have no other business other than serving the Lord in transcendental love. So in this condition of extreme lamentation that Uddhava is feeling due to his attachment for Krishna, Uddhava is beginning to recall the Lord's appearance in the material world. And it's appropriate for us to hear from Uddhava, because he is an eternal associate of the Lord. This is his qualification for being able to explain about the Lord. As we know, we shouldn't hear from non-devotees. So Uddhava is a perfect person to hear from about the position of Krishna, because no one else can accurately describe about Krishna. And Prabhupada himself is representing the whole disciplic succession, and their whole, even many of the Bhagavatam purports are derived from the commentaries of the Acharyas. So in that way he's presenting the views and understanding of the parampara. And Krishna had already explained about himself in Bhagavad Gita, but hardly anyone understood that until it was presented, Bhagavad Gita as it is, by Prabhupada. So, and also we hear in the first canto that this Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. So he, in this book, he's speaking through his great devotees. And so today Uddhava is describing the nature of the Lord's disappearance. Krishna had just recently left, so that incident of Krishna's disappearance is very fresh in Uddhava's consciousness. It's left a deep impression on Uddhava. So naturally he begins to speak about it to Vidura. And also on another level, Krishna is giving us this opportunity to deepen our understanding of him, of his activities, so that we can transcend the cycle of birth and death. As we hear in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, that just by knowing the appearance and activities of the Lord, we can not have to take birth again. So his activities include his disappearance. So Rudavik's describing about his disappearance. So he's first of all he's confirming Lord Brahma's statement that Krishna has an eternal form. And he appeared in that eternal form, and after enacting his transcendental pastimes, he performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is. So he left in that same form. So we're generally used to hearing when someone passes away, we say they leave their body. So the body's left there to rot or burn, but they went somewhere else. But it's not like that for Krishna. Krishna and his body are non-different, so when he leaves, his whole body goes, and that's Krishna. When we leave, our body is here, and we are separate. So this is Uddhava's transcendental vision. And Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the purport that in this verse the word avitripta drisham is most significant. So avitripta drisham, meaning without fulfillment of vision. So as we practice Krishna consciousness, this is a very important feature of our practice, that we're developing our transcendental vision. In materialistic life, before we're practicing Krishna consciousness, generally our vision is mundane, meaning that we can't see beyond the gross body and the subtle mind, and we can't understand that there's a sphere of soul acting in everybody, and that this soul is the active principle behind all endeavours and all activities. It's not just bodies working. There's a active principle inside everything that's making things happen by our desires. So, as we see this very fundamental misunderstanding of this wrong vision leads to very large-scale conflicts in the world, which we read about all the time. It's kind of, it's interesting how just there'll be one conflict, and some time back the US left Iraq and they finished their, they had such a terrible time in Iraq trying to fight insurgents, etc. And then with the passage of time, more conflicts come up. Now they're again starting missions in Iraq. They want Australia to come back and do things, and there's conflicts going on in the Ukraine. Some separatists, they want their own part of Ukraine, create a new border, and we are different from those other Ukrainians. And even in Iraq, there's the two main groups of Muslims. It's not enough to say that I'm a Muslim. Now I'm a Shiite Muslim, I'm a Sunni Muslim, and we don't get along. And there's some big philosophical difference in our understanding of it. So this is all based around the bodily misconception. So therefore it's very important to develop our transcendental vision. And of course the primary reference, or the first point of reference for developing that vision is the Bhagavad Gita. So there's many topics described by Krishna for us to understand. There's many things, many items of transcendental knowledge that we need to assimilate in order to awaken that transcendental vision. Also in the first canto of Bhagavad Gita, it says that persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So as well as Bhagavad Gita, they're giving us this transcendental knowledge by the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of Prabhupada. So some examples of this transcendental vision that we can awaken, given in Bhagavad Gita, we have in chapter 5, Bhaktaram Yajna Tapasam, the famous verse. So, you know, this is one thing that we need to understand, that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all our austerities and sacrifices. Just like, you know, the ultimate enjoyer of all the activities of the body is the stomach. Everything should be working to feed the stomach. So in the same way, the living entities being part and parcel of Krishna, all their activities are meant for the pleasure of Krishna. But in material conditional life, this is not understood by the conditioned soul, so it's there in Bhagavad Gita to enlighten us that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and the supreme proprietor of all the planets in the universe. We think we're the proprietor, just of this, you know, tiny planet or some country, or, you know, proprietor of the house. So we have all these misconceptions. So that's one, you know, item of transcendental knowledge that we need to, that's given to us to understand and meditate on. Also, Krishna says in chapter 7 that earth, water, fire, air and sky, mind, intelligence and false ego, these are his separated material energies. So we're understanding, you know, we're surrounded by this world, we're in the world, but we don't understand much about it. You know, although science is trying in so many ways to analyse it, and searching here and there for, you know, searching up to the greatest, the outer space, trying to find what's out there, down to the very small, the atomic structure and so on, trying to find the ultimate cause of everything. So, but then we have a, you know, quite simple explanation by Krishna that all these material elements are his separated material energies. We have, you know, the earth, it's so vast and supporting everything, giving structure to everything, and then right up to the sky, which is, you know, the container sky is called as the space or the container for everything to fit into. So it has to be a lot of space to fit the whole material manifestation into. And that space is also Krishna's energy. And then we go on to the subtle elements, the mind and the false ego. And then the final six chapters of Bhagavad Gita are classified as being about, in general, Jnana Yoga. So there's some nice verses in chapter 13 describing, you know, this transcendental vision. Krishna says in verse 30, one who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees. Then a few verses later, he says, those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So these are some kind of transcendental knowledge, Divya Gyan, that we find in chapter 13, that the soul is always aloof from all our bodily activities, and therefore activities of Krishna consciousness are the prime of prime importance. And our material life, we need to make the proper arrangements that it, you know, is not too disturbed, but we can understand that it's going to go on with the force of time, just pushing everything along, that we're in one situation now, but we take it too seriously, really. You know, we're in one situation, and we get disturbed by it, but we don't see that it's going to change. It's just pushing on. You know, we were studying in high school, then we moved along and to higher studies, and we're going to get old. We're going to face many more diseases. Actually, I changed my body recently. I used to have a wart on my middle finger. I don't know if you noticed. So, but now that the doctor burnt it off, and so my body's changed, and I can forget about my wart body and have a nicer body. So everything's changing. We're going to get wrinkles, and so we don't need to be too focused on this changing nature, but more about focused on our eternal, unchanging relationship with Krishna. So whatever happens to us, that relationship is still there, as strong as ever. So Krishna also explains some more items of transcendental knowledge in chapter 6. I mean, there must be so many more in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in verse 29, "A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere." And Prabhupada goes on to explain about this vision. This is the nice thing about Prabhupada's purport, is that he has all this transcendental vision, so he's giving it in his purports. So he says, "The yogi sees equally because he sees that all living entities, although in different situations, according to the results of fruitive work, in all circumstances remain the servants of God. While in the material energy, the living entity serves the material senses, and while in the spiritual energy, he serves the Supreme Lord directly. In either case, the living entity is a servant of God. This vision of equality is perfect in a person in Krishna consciousness." And in the famous verse in chapter 7, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanvam Mam Prabhajate, verse 19, Prabhupada also, very nice purport, he says, he realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Thus he thinks of everything in relation to Vasudev or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudev precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered great souls are very rare. So we're hearing so much about what is the vision of a great devotee, a pure devotee. So the more we hear, we kind of build up that vision in ourselves, and we keep hearing these things that Krishna is the proprietor, etc. And also by vision, it's kind of synonymous with a goal. If we have a vision, it means we're looking towards something. We have a goal in mind. So when we develop transcendental vision, then we develop a transcendental goal. As Prabhupada says in this purport that persons who are able to satisfy their material hankerings by seeing him in truth perspective were thus able to go back with him into his kingdom. So this is the goal for us, to develop our transcendental vision, not for any cause, for for our own reason, not for any distinction or anything for ourselves, but so that we can become reinstated in our constitutional position as servants of Krishna and go back to the spiritual world. So as we're hearing, then we develop this vision, but it doesn't stop there. To attain that vision or to attain that goal requires we have the practice of Krishna consciousness. So So we have to strive to fulfill that vision. And Prabhupada gave us a simple formula for achieving that vision. Regular chanting and hearing, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities. And all of this needs to be done with that transcendental vision in mind, that transcendental goal, understanding why we're doing these things. To awaken our dormant love for Krishna, not just mechanically. Nothing should be done out of sentiment or out of religious duty. Some people do like that, but without developing this transcendental goal, then how can we expect to achieve that goal? We have to have a goal there and be working toward it. But if we don't have that goal, we're just practicing out of material piety, then we can't achieve a transcendental goal. So as we saw with Prabhupada, in aiming, his vision was that he's the eternal servant of the servant of Krishna. So on the order of his spiritual master, he travelled to the West and underwent so many tribulations to fulfil the order of his guru. But because his vision was so strong, it was completely fixed and unshakable, that nothing could deter him. So he had heart attacks on the Jaladuta, and before that even his former wife had sold his copies of Srimad Bhagavatam that he'd put so much effort into. But nothing could deter him because his vision was so strong. He was never disheartened in his attempts to carry out the order of his guru. So from this we learn to be always enthusiastic and depending on Krishna. Krishna is the, sanctions whatever results he wants to give, good or bad. But the devotee, as exemplified in Prabhupada, stays fixed in their determination to be the eternal servant. So in this verse, the word was avitripta drisham, meaning without fulfillment of vision. So this is a something we want to avoid. If we're developing a transcendental goal, a vision for going back to the spiritual world and ending our material existence, but then somehow or other it remains unfulfilled. We get to the end of life, and because Maya is always trying to, she wants to cover us again. So as we're developing transcendental vision, the chanting of Hare Krishna cleanses our consciousness, and so we become less covered. Our natural position is reawakened, but Maya is not just sitting back, doing nothing. She's testing us, so she'll keep trying to cover us. At every stage, because she knows that's, we have had this many illicit desires, sinful desires in the material world to enjoy separately from Krishna. So she keeps alluring us, come on, you've wanted this before, so many lifetimes you've been trying to enjoy the material world, why don't you keep trying to enjoy? And so she keeps trying to cover us and divert us from our practice of it and aiming toward that transcendental goal. So, therefore, devotee association is the key there. Really taking shelter of devotees, actually. We talk about association of devotees, and of course many people are kind of around devotees and with devotees, but associating with devotees is to take shelter of their knowledge that they have and their experience, and really, you know, humble ourselves and put ourselves under their shelter under their guidance, so that under that shelter we will be protected from Maya and go back to the spiritual world. So just quickly, I mentioned there was an interesting statement Prabhupada made that the Lord, by His unlimited causeless mercy, has innumerable Vaikuntha planets in the Brahma-Jyoti sphere of the spiritual world. And in that transcendental world, there is an unlimited arrangement for the unlimited pleasure of the living entities. So, as we were hearing yesterday from Gopa Prabhu, that Lord Krishna, He only needs Srimati Radharani for His pleasure. She satisfies Him fully. But, as it said, by His unlimited causeless mercy, He has innumerable Vaikuntha planets. So the Vedas describe that the one Supreme Lord expands into many. And there's a quote here also from Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says that the Vedas compare the Lord to a tree standing still, yet bearing many fruits, bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers, and changing leaves. The plenary expansions of the Lord who preside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known by a variety of names: Purushottama, Trivikram, Keshava, Madhava, Aniruddha, Hrishikesh, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Sridhar, Vasudev, Damodar, Janardhan, Narayan, Vamana, Padmanabhya, and so on. So, and He's expanded Himself, as it says, for the unlimited pleasure of the living entities. So generally we're encouraged to, you know, do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And but we shouldn't think, oh, I'm doing so much for Krishna's pleasure, and what's He doing for me? But it's actually, the more we give pleasure to Krishna, the more He becomes pleased and gives pleasure to us. And it's a reciprocal relationship that we have, that the living entities have with Krishna. And there's also a nice statement in Canto 10, the pastime with Lord Brahma and the cowherd boys. As we described thereafter, just to create pleasure, both for Brahma and for the mothers of the calves and cowherd boys, Krishna, the creator of the entire cosmic manifestation, expanded Himself as calves and boys. So here again we're finding that just for the pleasure of His devotees, Krishna is expanding Himself as the calves and boys. So we have this very nice opportunity of returning to the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, if that's primarily the objective that Prabhupada gave to us. And I'll finish there. See if anyone has any comments or questions about today's class.
So
Actually, I happened to read a statement by... the question is that... Daniel Prabhu is asking, he read a statement in Prabhupada's purport that the Lord's energies are non-different from his personal body. So, but we understand, and so there was some confusion because he was feeling that because we understand the material elements are inferior, and you know, Krishna's body is Satchitananda, like that. So how can we distinguish? So I can recall when I was researching this class, I read a verse. I didn't include it in the class, but Prabhupada says that the material and spiritual energies are both emanating from Krishna. So they have this same source, same supreme source. And he was explaining this is the Mayavadi idea that, you know, everything's one with the Lord. But he says, actually, the Vaishnava conception is, although they're from the same source, we have to distinguish that the different energies have different influences, and inferior and superior. He gave the example of fire. Fire is emanating heat and light. So, you know, we can tolerate the heat, but we'll get burnt by the fire. So we have to distinguish between the two energies, the material energy and the spiritual energy. So the material energy is coming from Krishna, but it's inferior, and it's, you know, we don't want to be in contact with the material energy. Although it is Krishna's energy, it's non-different from him. So like that, we need to distinguish. This is always very important in our spiritual practice to have transcendental intelligence, discriminate what is what. Not that it's all one. It is all Krishna's energy, but we see, you know. And also there's different classifications of devotees given, and many things there's differentiation given, and we have to use our intelligence to discriminate. Gaurav would stand.
Just one question, sir. Yeah. Krishna performed a lot of his pastimes in front of everybody, like devotees, non-devotees.
Mm.
But at the time of disappearance, he was writing, he was removing his form on the side for those who were unable to see him. So at the time of his disappearing, what happened exactly?
What happened when he
disappeared?
Prabhupada explains to fulfill the desire of the non-devotees. They're always trying to bring Krishna down to the platform of an ordinary conditioned soul. So they have that mentality. So to satisfy that, Krishna appeared to disappear from the world as an ordinary person. So he removed himself from the vision of the non-devotees so that they think he's no longer present. He was just an ordinary person. But that's another interesting thing, that he removed his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is. So people who can see him as he is, for them, he's still present, he's still visible. So Chitula Prabhupada, you know, we hear about pure devotees see Krishna everywhere, not just in his energies, but they actually see Lord Shyamasundara everywhere. So for them,
He hasn't disappeared. He is still present for the pure devotees.
But when he said his body is Chidananda, then what will you understand? He had, when he left his body, he has a dead body, like a normal human being?
No, sat means eternal. So, an eternal body. Our body is asat, temporary. Krishna's body is eternal. So he, you know, his whole body went to the next universe, as we'll read in tomorrow's verse. So he didn't leave any body, you know, to have some funeral rites or something. You know, no one came along and, oh no, Krishna, dead. His whole body went to the next universe to perform his next pastimes. Yes.
My question is regarding the statement that executing required penance. They were unable to see him as he is due to not executing required penance. Now we understand that Krishna and bhakti is beyond penance of austerity, knowledge, yoga, all these material means. So how do we understand, what is the nature of these required penance that you mentioned here?
In the purport, Prabhupada is talking about the Vedic way of ritualistic performances. So that, I think that kind of penance of being involved in the Varnashram system, he says one can attain, you know, these various qualities of, as they describe, truthfulness, control of the mind, so brahminical qualities basically. And then can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service. So that's the gradual way to attaining Krishna consciousness, through being purified and elevated over lifetimes through the Varnashram system. And that they can gradually come to see Krishna. That those persons who are unable to see the Lord as He is remain attached to material hankerings and not able to go back home, back to Godhead. Yeah, so I think, maybe if they, even if they weren't directly engaged in bhakti yoga, because, you know, they had some level of faith, then just seeing the Lord was enough to, they became purified of all their sinful reactions and could be purified enough to go back to Godhead. Like that, to say they were not envious. Stop here. Kantra Shimadvagatam ki. Shila Prabhupada ki. Uttagora Pramanandi.